Oh, the shame that will get if you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
Yeah, answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. That's at Team 33. We're also on Facebook and also on iTunes, Off the Ball Sports Radio, and lots of other places as well. I tend to lose my train of thought sometimes in our intros. Colin Buhig is here, though.
Hey, Raf. How are you?
Right, so the main interview this week, which is podcasted separately, if you're looking for it, it's with the author Derek Hammond of the Got Not Got football gift book. So obviously the title is a reference to the old sticker albums of old. Basically, for anybody who's a child of the 60s, 70s, 80s, even into the 90s like I was, this is actually perfect because it brings back a lot of memories, things like Subbuteo, sticker collections, Panini, etc. Now, in terms of the toys of yore, I'm not going to ask you exactly what age you are, but I'm presuming you were around when Subbuteo was still somewhat a thing. Would you have had a set?
Yeah, we're of the exact same vintage, age-wise. So we'd have the same memories. But yeah, Subbuteo, I had one. It was a funny one, really, because like if you tried to sell Subbuteo nowadays, you'd really struggle. Cause it was just, I can't believe it did so well. Because you just have stationary figures.
Yeah.
And you're really just playing, you're just, it's just your fingers playing football.
I like how you clarified this. Also, the toys we are going to be discussing here are for children and not for.
But it was. I didn't like the players would just stand there and. But it was strangely gripping. I think it's because I remember I was single digits when that was big, Subbuteo, and I was just obsessed with football when I was a kid. Like, yeah. Just obsessed with it because of the advent of the Premier League or the Premiership then, and. I guess it was just so lifelike to me as an actual football pitch. And that was before I was old enough to even play 11-a-side. So I guess it was the closest thing I got to. And I also assume that's where other people saw it as well, or the allure of it. It was great. But like you just said there, Premier League stickers, Panini stickers. And I actually forgot how huge that was. Just having.
Did you collect them? Or
yeah, well, we got them in season in school, and then you'd get your pack from your local newsagent, and you'd open them up, and like you'd be getting some serious journeymen, like some like Wimbledon favourites. But if you had a shiny in the pack,
yeah,
you were god. And you'd have the stack would be huge, like you'd be building them up throughout the season. So by the time you got to springtime, you'd have a massive stack of these stickers. And then at the two lunchtime breaks you get in primary school, you'd be out in the yard doing swaps. But it was all about the shiny. So you'd have 20 crests, wasn't it, for each Premier League team had the do you know what I'm talking about with the shiny?
Vaguely. See, I had sticker book collections, but what I always did, and same with football cards, I would buy the first pack and then lose interest. So I still have all these old cards and stuff, but it was always a thing of I'm not a collector. I start.
Yeah, it was the only thing I stayed with. I remember Pokemon was huge when I was tail end of primary school. Yeah. So for both of us, it would have been huge in our time. And I remember I didn't get into that. I remember Wu-Tang Clan was huge. Things like this, right?
Tamagotchis, I remember.
Tamagotchis is massive. WWF as it was known then, before it became WWE, the Attitude Era.
I've actually got back into it, but I think it's thanks to some of the people in the office.
Yeah, we have a few fans, yeah.
Yeah, Richie McCormick, yeah. Darren Cleary, when he was here as well, was another big one. And it's just, it ended up on my YouTube, and then now I'm just clicking into stuff,
great.
Only from my
same
very,
with
me. Like the couple of years that I actually watched it back in the day.
And so all of those things happened when we were kids, but the Premier League stickers were the big thing, because you would collect them, but it would be about the competition, about who had the best pack, and, right. And by the end of the season, who had the best cards, and you'd have such a large stack that you'd have to have an elastic band around just to keep them together. And it was a huge thing in our school anyway. Maybe it was just us, but it was massive for us.
I think
like
it was big in Leitrim, just not the school I went to. Pokemon was bigger in terms of that kind of thing. Obviously, as I said, I would have collected stickers, but when I say collect, it's you buy the first pack with the actual sticker book, and then you start, you know, you think about something else, and you know your interest.
I think
this
was all that we thought, because I think when like that was the Premier League starting, and United were so dominant, and I think it just captured everyone's imagination back then. And like the advent of Sky Sports too, and it was just the time to be, if you were in any way sporty as a kid, you automatically kind of fell in with following the Premier League. Because even talking to people nowadays, a lot of people have lost interest in football and support maybe Ga or rugby or other sports. But they'll often say to me, like, I used to be a huge United fan or Liverpool fan. I used to love the Premier League in the 90s.
Blackburn Rovers.
Blackburn, of course, yeah. So
worked out very well. Or the Everton fans.
Relegated 4 years after they won the league, yeah. So that was huge. But, like, when you were asking me about this, I was thinking of other things and I was like, writing down a few things. I thought, Jesus, yeah, I remember that. Like, I remember my first jersey was Paddy Bonner's Italian 91.
Oh, that's a funky one.
Yeah, and I don't even know where I got that from. And just play, like, constantly going in goal when I was younger in park football and having that. I guess you'd like, it was definitely a present as opposed to a toy, but jerseys were such a huge thing for me at the time. I remember my uncle got me a Roy Keane jersey, the 94-95 United one, and for some reason it had black numbers at the back instead of the traditional white. Right. I don't know why. And then I used to collect bobbleheads of the footballers a lot.
I think, yeah, in that book they have a whole collection, because I remember seeing them like in the back of magazines and things, and they were, some of them were more lifelike than others, obviously. Some people you would actually, if without the actual name written down underneath, you'd take a little while to work out who it is.
But I remember the ones I got were the attention to detail was so good. I remember I had United's left flank, so I had Dennis Hearn and Ryan Giggs. And it was the same year I was talking about the Roy Keane jerseys, so 94-95. That was back in the time when clubs wore the home jersey for two consecutive seasons. So from 94 to 96, United had that same jersey. And they had Irwin and Giggs. The jerseys were perfect on these, basically what you call them, as figurines, I suppose. And they'd have the exact Premier League numbers at the time. So Irwin 3 and Giggs 11. And the attention to detail for the United, the full kit on these things were amazing. And I was actually back in Cork, where I'm from, a couple of months ago, and I was clearing out a few things from the attic. And I found these. And the pang of nostalgia when I found them. I was like transported back to that time. You're talking 25 years ago. But I remember I remember the shop that I got it in, which is long gone, which actually helps with the nostalgia element, because you're thinking back to that time when that shop was there. And at the same time I was clearing out the attic, I found a whole raft of old jerseys that I got at the time. I know we're talking toys, but I suppose you're looking at, you'd collect, looking at it, my like passion and graw for jerseys was like, I was collecting them like they were toys, because I was trying to get as many jerseys as possible.
Yeah.
I was a massive United fan and got every version of the United jersey that I could, and every version of the Irish jersey that I could. And then when I got a bit older into secondary school, there was a shop called Football Crazy in Cork, and they used to just have the most random selection of jerseys ever, just like a completely eclectic mix. I don't know where the owner got these jerseys from, but I remember getting the like Auxerre third choice jersey from 2002-2003, a Borussia Dortmund champion, the jersey that they wore the year that they won the UEFA Cup, I think in 2004. Might be wrong on that year, but it was around that.
Was it 0102?
0102, I think. Yeah, maybe you're right, yeah. And I used to just collect these random, like PSG's third choice kit, back before PSG had the money. So finding these jerseys in the attic was mad, like just to go back to that time.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, because I still have the 2000 or 2001 02 sticker book collection, the Premier League one. And again, it was one of those where I bought the first pack. And
did you just never get into it?
No, I was just...
You lost interest in it?
No, it was just, I'm not very consistent in terms of particularly things like stickers and collecting things. I start and then, you know, there's a point where other things happen in life and you just you end up doing other things. Like I don't think people remember it, but Beauty, obviously everyone remembers the little figurines, but they actually brought out a load of football cards back in the mid 90s as well. So I had a bit of that, which my old lad sorted me out, because I didn't have my own money, obviously.
That's the thing. When I talk about all these things, I have a passion and graw for jerseys. I'm talking about trying to convince people to buy me these things constantly.
I'm reliant on my mother or father.
Childhood salesman, like trying to see the benefits of getting me this jersey.
I had some video cards, but the joy of them is they did influence what we did on Team 33 in that.
Yeah.
sometimes you'd flick through them even in like 5 years ago, and we have since interviewed a lot of the names of people I was kind of just looking at avidly. I remember one random guy, you might remember Mikel Beck, we had on a few years
ago. Oh yeah, yeah.
Played for Derby, didn't go too well. He was probably better remembered at Middlesbrough, but he was on one of these cards, and Tony Yeboah, I think, was on the cover, and he was like our first big interview as well. So this stuff, assuming you go into football journalism, it does have an influence.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I like, speaking of that stuff, when you had those guys on and you were showing them, the big thing for me was...
although they don't react much. Like, I said it to Mikel Beck, I used to have your football card, and he was like, well,
yeah,
okay.
So you want them to be as excited as you are. So our now famous roadshow from September with Roy Keane and Gary Neville. So beforehand in the green room, I was talking to Roy Keane, and I thought, you know, the old Cork connection would help us connect. And it kind of did. I think he was just humouring me. But when I was 12, I went through a glass door on holidays in Spain, hence the scars. And it was really touch and go. I didn't actually realise at the time, which is, it's a good time to happen when you're 12, because you're old enough not to be frightened to death, literally. And you're not old enough to be cynical about like what might actually happen to you. But basically, I was touch and go for a few days. Had a punctured lung and the rest of it, and had a few operations. But in the meantime, my father got in touch with a guy called Niall O'Sullivan, who was great friends with Roy Keane. All so right. he got in touch with Roy, and this would have been August 2001. So I think that was pretty much the peak of Keane's powers. Between 99 and 01, he was really excellent. That's when he nearly left United to Juventus, and Bayern Munich were interested. I think he was the first ever six-figure, a week paid footballer in the Premier League, so he really at his zenith. And this guy, Neil, helped us out and asked him, could you do something for this kid here in Cork? Because he's had a bit of trouble recently, like, as in, you know, he died. And would you send him a card or something like that? So Roy sent me a card, which is just a generic, like, best wishes, hope you feel better. But he also sent me the jersey he wore for Man United away to Sturm Graz in the Champions League. It was a blue jersey from 97-98. United wore it in the game at Highbury, where Arsenal won 3-2. David Platt scored the winner. A lot of people will remember that game. It was, I think, Arsene Wenger's first really big win as Arsenal manager.
Yeah.
I think it was the year they went on to win the league. They won the double that year, Arsenal.
Yeah,
so it would have been the start of
1998. I remember, I think, the group that United were in the Champions League. It was Juventus, Sturm Graz, I think, as well.
Graz,
and then
yeah.
Kosice or something. I can't remember. I think it's either a Czech or a Slovak team.
That's
or something.
Right, yeah.
K-O-S-I-C, well, it's a C with some type of...
I'm just going to look at that now, yeah, yeah.
And that's actually based off a football magazine I used to have. So before the 98 World Cup, my mother bought me, because, again, I would have known a lot about Man United and all of that, but in terms of global football, it was a Football Italia magazine, and I still have it. They have it in the family home down in Leitrim, but essentially it was like a World Cup preview, but it had, like, Italian scores of that era at the back, I think, and then at some Champions League thing where Juventus were involved at the front. But I just, in my head, I still remember the groups they were involved in. I think they played Monaco in that run as well. And did they meet Juventus again?
That was when there was two groups, right? So the knockout stage, there was another group.
I don't know if it was in that season or not, but yeah, around that era, there was the two group thing as well, because I don't know why I can remember group stages and ties in the Champions League and UEFA Cup back then, whereas ask me about 2 or 3 years ago, I need to think a little bit.
It's a lot of people though, I think. I'd be the same. Because even I was watching the goals of the decade from this decade there earlier. So geez, I forgot about so many of these goals from 2016-17 around then.
But the old stuff is what actually always jumps out.
It resonates, yeah, completely. Because you link it with your childhood. But anyway, I went up to Roy Keane to tell him that story and show him the jersey. It's exactly the same as Beck's reaction to you, where he was just like, oh yeah. It's like he says to me, oh, you're lucky I didn't give you a Rockman jersey, which is who he played for in Cork. It's like, usually I wouldn't give a jersey like that.
Yeah.
And that was it. And he was kind of like, anything else for me? I said, no, you made my childhood. It was amazing. He was like, oh yeah, that's grand. But he also did, like, he used to do stuff like that all the time, and he would never publicize it, nor would he want to publicize. And that was at a time when he had the skinhead, and he used to use that as a he said he was basically acting and playing a character like the fearsome Roy Keane. And that was at a time when he was actually doing all these lovely things off the field, and he would never want you to know about it because it would ruin that character that he created. But that for me, like, that's what stood out straight away for me.
That's why I cut my hair, just to appear hard and everything else. And I don't think that's working at all. End of call is here, by the way, as well. I insulted him outside. I think your mic is right over there, actually.
Raph, how are you?
Yes. I think I made an assumption that for some reason that you weren't au fait with Sabutio just due to your age. But obviously, you didn't take that too well.
Yeah, no, of course I had it. I'm not sure of many households in Ireland and indeed Britain that didn't have Sabutio at one stage or another.
But into the 2000s? Or what's your kind of general childhood range?
Well, here's the thing. I grew up in Donegal, so we're still slightly behind everyone else when it comes to these kind of things. Not so much in the more recent past, but definitely from the 90s onwards, we were still using for example, like, I grew up on the Sega Mega Drive, the PS1, PS2. Like, I was using toys and experienced the same kind of childhood as people your age were, because of the fact that I was from Donegal and we were behind the times a little bit.
Right.
So I'm completely au fait with VHS.
Okay,
and,
fair
you
enough.
Know, the rise through those kind of technologies.
Yeah, because like a lot of my football memories, again, like, I think I owned a few kind of Man United videos and things like that, and they're the things that stick out with you.
Yeah, I had a United video from their pre-season in 94-95, and I used to know it off by heart. It's the saddest thing. I used to know this. Oh, I remember Lee Sharp scored 3 goals that pre-season tour, and they toured at the Eastern, or was it Asia or something like that? It's back at a time when that was kind of unheralded, because now they make such a big deal of the pre-season tours because they're so lucrative financially. And they were testing the waters. I wouldn't say they were ahead of their time, but I don't know how many teams were doing that at that time, 25 years ago, where they were going all over the place for pre-season to try and get into that market.
Yeah,
but they remember, it would have been pretty common. Like, Irish sides went to South America and everything, so it wasn't a Man United only thing.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, and I don't know why I just had that feeling that, like, United were so far ahead, like, in a marketing sense. But I remember anyway them going to these, like, far lands, as it was at the time. You're thinking, like, you would have no concept of it at all, because you were just Premier League obsessed at that age.
Yeah, they didn't go to Libya as that I haven't watched the documentary that came out this week, but apparently Brian Kerr.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Over there, yeah.
Bohemians / St. Pat's amalgamation team over to Libya during the Colonel Gaddafi era.
As you do. Yeah.
On the topic of videos, though, I'm not sure if any of you had it, but I was obsessed with playing football as a youngster. And improving skills, and if I saw a player do a skill on the pitch, I wanted to learn how to do it. And they used to release videos showing you how to do these step overs and how to do the round the world.
Kind of like the F2 freestyler lads we had on.
A little bit like that, yeah. I haven't actually thought about it like that, except I'm not sure I don't follow them that much, so I'm not sure how much they demonstrate how you do them. But you used to have players like, I think Ronaldo, the original one, had a video at one stage of doing skill videos. I know Shinsuke Nakamura released one, and it was just like, I'd constantly just watch these videos, video cassettes of how to do a step over, how to do the round the worlds, and basically a training video but for soccer.
Yeah, I think, which one did I had a United 83 to 94 one, so it must have been bought in like 96 or 97. I just saw it on a shelf in a shop, and then I think I said it to my dad, you're getting that for me.
This is the thing.
But and then it actually did make sense, because later on, like Brian Robson was our first big interview, and he featured heavily in that period as well. So it was educational.
You're doing research in childhood without knowing it.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, literally half the football memorabilia magazines, whatever they bought, they've all fed into what we're doing today, and over the last 5 years, like, even a lot of the interviews, especially if you're going back to 90s, 2000s, you spotted them somewhere first, and then like 10 years later you come back and you're kind of getting them in, and obviously you have fresher memories of them than even the lads who are playing now.
And you're the youngest researcher in history of radio, Raph.
Somehow, yeah.
You know, all I'm thinking about during this is FIFA 97. Do you remember that one where you could play indoor football as well?
That was
your traditional
one of the best ones, and people still talk about that in Living Legend. I replayed it there a couple of months ago, because I still have my PS1 and PS2, and it's not great.
Yeah, you see, I don't ever want to do it again, because I know it's not going to be as good as I remembered it, as all nostalgia is the case.
Well, some games do live up to the previous expectations of them. Like, I went back, my favourite FIFA is FIFA 04, And that
Ryan Giggs on the cover.
Ryan Giggs was on
Edgar Davids. Yeah, that was all three, maybe.
Edgar Davids and
Ronaldinho. No, was he on that?
No, Ronaldinho was later. It was
Henry,
Edgar Davids, and another. I can't remember top of my head who it was, but it had the video of the pre-game video where the helicopter was chasing them around. Playing for, it was Del Piero for Juventus that was on the cover as well. They were playing Astro football and they were doing skills, and there was a helicopter in the sky.
Yeah.
And what is the song? It's
not a little less conversation, though.
No,
it's not. That was a previous year.
First to 100 wins.
Yeah, that was the Eric Cantona advert. And there were some great ads from back in that year as well.
Yeah, but it was kind of that ilk, and it was the one where, you know, you used the top spin to hit the free kicks.
Yeah,
you could pick
that was a huge thing.
And it turns out they've actually brought that back in this FIFA, so everything comes around.
When could you stop fouling the goalkeeper in FIFA when he had the ball?
I believe that was FIFA 04 or 2.
That's one of the greatest shames ever of our lifetime. Speaking of this, I remember that was an incredible release. If you were getting hammered, just get the game abandoned. Get more than five players sent off, game was finished. Just go up and foul the keeper whenever the keeper had it in his hands. So just purposely take a bad shot.
Right.
Keeper had it. You're near a striker. Sprint mode. Straight at the keeper. Two-footed. 5-5. Game off. It's incredible. And FIFA obviously realised this, that these games are getting abandoned. So they stopped doing it and ruined all the fun. And that's basically, football's never recovered from that time.
Although I think that was allowed in the rules in football in the 60s or 70s based on the footage I've seen. But anyway.
Well, they've brought that back now. Or not the final keeper, but they brought the indoor football back to this game as well.
And so is it going
to
be?
They're obviously trying to hit the nostalgia market.
I think so, because everything's cyclical. And now we're talking about this, and people want to be reminded of all these times when they started. Because I loved the original PlayStation too, when it was connected and it was the grey box. And it was just plain grey.
I always played PC, so that was always the...
Really?
Yeah. Oh, God. You're one of those.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There was like 1 in 10 people played PC.
Have I ever owned a PlayStation? No, I don't think so.
The only thing I've ever played on PC was NFL Madden.
Was that any use?
It was excellent. Because it's one of those games where, you know, like even when it's on the PlayStation, you're not really using the arrows that much. You're using, you hit a key to put the ball out, and then your whatever receiver you're thrown to, you just press key as well. So it's basically the same on PC.
Yeah, well, no, it was always PC. Like, I think, what was the first one I played? FIFA 98, and then definitely FIFA 04, and I think 10 might have been the last one. So I kind of retired.
The only thing I played in...
Moved up to Football Manager, starting to play football, seats and trainers and whatever.
Championship Manager, Football Manager is the only thing I played on the PC from a sporting context. And I used to get so obsessed with it, so caught up with it. It was... it would just take over your... days, like being a full-time manager.
I always felt that that Football Manager was a little bit, there was a little bit of an arrogance between Football Manager players, and they looked down a little bit on FIFA players. You could do the same in FIFA as you could do in Football Manager. It just didn't take 4 days to do.
No, but in Football Manager, you're in charge of a team, and it's completely up to you.
As a young up and coming Football Manager, when I was playing it, I never really did that well, and to this day I still don't do that well because I'm too critical of the players. I don't give them praise.
Yeah, you can't do that. You just got to kill them with praise.
And
like,
even if we were 5-0 up, if say I was Barcelona and I was playing Burton Albion, and I don't know, some game, I don't know why Burton would be playing. let's make it more realistic. Manchester United, Burton Albion in the FA Cup, second round, 5-0 up at halftime, I'd still pick the option to absolutely destroy the players.
No, you gotta delude them. That brings you 4 Champions Leagues in a row at Inter Milan. Yeah. That's the 5th final.
I never
to Liverpool.
Played FIFA.
Really?
Yeah. I was pretty crap, I'll be honest. At
Derek Ryan, welcome.
Hello. I'm pretty crap at it, to be honest. I played it a few times with the lads. The lads used to love playing me because they win like 17-2. So I never really played it properly. But I loved Football Manager. Championship Manager. I loved when it became, and then it kind of changed around. I broke my leg in 2011, and I bought the new gamer in 2011, and I liked it, but it was getting a bit too complicated by then. I loved the old simple version. I had Championship Manager 2005, just when Chelsea became extremely rich. That was that summer, 04, 05 summer. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved it because it was just so simple and basic, and there weren't players given out because they were unhappy. You know what I mean? There was too much nonsense then the next game.
But
it was before footballers had rights and there was like the maximum and time, yeah, maximum wage.
When the manager was
everybody was happy, you know, it was actually the book
stopped at the manager. There's no question in what I did. But
yeah, like, I mean, obviously it's a lot more realistic. The newer version just became a bit complicated with, I don't know, I liked it. I still played it, but I just didn't like it as much as the older, simple version, which was just very much like start and do you want your fullbacks to attack? Yes, great. Yeah. That's pretty much the only tactic you had to do.
I do like Football Manager. I was just more of a FIFA person when I was growing up. It's probably because my brother was into it as well and we were playing against each other. But one thing I didn't like about the career in Football Manager, and it's just a preferable thing in FIFA, gives you the option, is when you lose a match in Football Manager, it's not necessarily your fault. Like it's left up to a computer simulation. Like you have no control over the actual. You do have control. You have some sort of control over result. But
that was the most frustrating thing in the world.
Ultimately, it comes down to a computer program
deciding the result of the game.
The result. Whereas FIFA,
keep it in the post.
Whereas
the
FIFA, it's all. If you lose, if you lose, it's your fault because you did not play well in that game.
There's a few times in playing Football Manager, Championship Manager, when the ball would just non-stop hit the post or deflect off someone's arse. And in the Champions League final, you brought Burton Albion to the Champions League final and they lose by a 2-0 to Barcelona because the ball has been cleared off the line 17 times. That was pretty frustrating, and that did result in me stopping the game and restarting it more than once, I have to admit, without saving it.
In terms of toys in general, though, from not now, from back in your childhood, what were they? Football ones, I'm talking specifically.
I had a net out my back garden, which not many of us had, like, in the area, because, like, it's a residential street. But, my parents bought me, I got it from Santa, a net out the back garden when I was a kid. So I used to have that. And if you'd love to come around and we'd play football at the back, a couple of games here and there.
Sabutio, was that?
No. I think I have.
I keep harking back to it.
It's like you work for Sabutio.
I've never really played it.
Do you say that you actually played football?
Yeah.
I was like outside.
I was quite poor. Yeah. I know.
Interesting.
Yeah. What's this? We got out into the sun and actually did stuff. I was quite poor at football, to be perfectly honest. So it probably didn't really help me too much. But yeah, no, I had that at the back gardens. That was pretty cool. And yeah, I think I had Sabutio, but I never really played it, to be honest.
Yeah, so there was this thing called Super Striker, which was vaguely similar, but you press the head and then it kicks. That's
like
really
an advanced Sabutio.
It was something that was vaguely familiar or similar to it. Like, it's in that book as well that Derek Hammond put together. But it essentially, you click the head of the player and there's a mechanism that allows it to kick. And actually, if you broke one of the legs off them, they tended to be able to curl the ball, which was always an advantage.
Trick of the trade.
Yeah, but yeah, that's why I never really played Sabutio, as much as I sound like I'm a salesman for the company. It was Sabutio football cards that I had, but as I said, we got a good few interviews out of that as well. But
Top Trumps would have been a big one when I was younger. I'm not sure if you just would have played with
those.
I've
heard of it. I don't really know what it is.
So I suppose it's the equivalent of baseball cards for football, except you got them in the match magazines and you get it and you'd play. I'm struggling to remember the rules. I'm pretty sure we just made up the rules as we went along and decided Terry is clearly better than, I don't know, Leon Ferdinand or something. Every player had a score. I think you might have pitted defenders up against strikers. Now, somebody might be able to correct me on that, but if the striker had a higher scoring rating than the defender he was going up against did defensively, then you won and you got a point, I think. We used to play it on the bus. I don't know. I can't remember the exact rules, but it would have been a big one for me.
Yeah, Match Magazine takes me back. That was kind of my first proper magazine. And then you obviously graduate to 442 or World Soccer. Or
oh, no, Match's biggest
World
rival.
Soccer.
Shoot.
Shoot. I never. Yeah. I don't think I've ever read Shoot once in my life.
That was just Match. It was Match, but it was called Shoot.
It wasn't available in Leitrim.
I was telling you that story about going up to the attic recently, and I have a massive bundle of Match magazines.
I still have a couple of them.
Massive.
Yeah.
And I opened them up, and every single poster has been cut out from it, with the exception of Liverpool posters. But I used to cover my bedroom wall. You wouldn't know what colour my bedroom wall was, because I had Premier League posters up. from like Barnsley players, just anyone coming up, with the exception of Liverpool players. So the, every single Liverpool player is as it's as it was intended in the original Match magazine cover.
Yeah.
Everyone else is up. All other 19 teams got it.
World soccer always felt a bit too sophisticated.
I used to browse that in the shop and never buy it. World soccer.
I always kind of felt like it was a bit too highbrow for me.
I relegated myself to Match. I think every single sentence in Match ended with an exclamation point.
Because they were shouting it all the time.
Lowercase. But they were surprised themselves at the sentence.
Yeah, I don't think I ever once noticed that at all. But I still have a load of old Match magazines that kind of sit there. Like, I'm not sure why they're being kept or why.
I used to,
my mother's listening, please don't throw them out. Keep them.
The United magazine I bought regularly around that time as well, and the same thing would have. I still have some posters in my home room. I think up on the wall of the Champions League final 99 and all that kind of stuff.
I still have the, and it's from Match magazine now that I think of it, but and it's still up on one of the walls in the house. But it's the 2002 World Cup wall chart where you kind of stuck in the little team jerseys and things. So that's still sitting up there.
I remember having that. Yeah.
So I remember filling it out. We left it up on the wall, and what are we now? We're almost 18 years on, and it hasn't been taken down. It will be apparent probably next year. But
nobody in Ireland will ever move on from that World Cup.
No.
Just keep, when you it's take that down, reminder. It's a sign that we finally moved on as a country.
Yeah.
On the front of keeping things, I suppose, with Christmas coming around the corner, the Christmas, I don't know what you would call them, booklets that you would get from football clubs, annuals. Collect any annuals, football annuals? I have a stack of Celtic ones I still have.
Yeah.
The club ones?
Just GA ones in our house.
I used to have a lot of festive stuff from United.
Hurling gown.
United lended itself to Christmas beautifully.
Yeah.
I have a lot of festive stuff from it. But I used to just, Christmas time, I used to just rewatch those videos I was telling you about with those pre-season ones. Saying there earlier, any pre-season video from the 90s involving United, I know it off by heart.
I used to love those. Actually, were they season updates? I don't think, were they even season updates, or were they like month?
But they used to release VHSs all the time.
Yeah.
And it would be like half season videos. And it would just be like, here's the first half of 93-94.
Yeah,
and you'd buy it. And
it
was like £15. And you'd just buy it. And it was just all the games from the first half of the season. And it would just abruptly end in January.
Yeah.
Because you don't have all
95-96 season, suddenly before Cantona gets suspended, United are going to win the league.
You don't have all the highlights on YouTube. That's probably why they did it. And I suppose it's as good as you're going to get back then.
No, big time. But it just seems
like
strange.
You wouldn't have dreamed of what the internet was going to become. The internet didn't.
See, this is all in lieu of the internet.
Yeah.
This is why all these things happened. Like, what football-related toys are there now?
I don't know. that goes over my head. I don't know.
They're all video games.
Media and video games. So this is the last great time of it, where you could actually have physical toys and football. And those bobbleheads, comes back to that, I mean, they're about the only things that still have lasted the test of time. And other than that, everything has gone digital.
Yeah. But
I mean, if you're discounting jerseys and football boots in general, what are people collecting? Silence.
Half and half scarves.
I don't actually have that much of a problem with half and half scarves.
I don't know why people hate them so much.
No, if it's a friendly match, fine. But if it's a Manchester derby or a Manchester derby, that's out of order.
Celtic but Rangers. Look,
have you got a Celtic Rangers half and half scarf?
No, but I'm not.
How do you? Answer the question.
I'm not a tourist though. Like that. Like
but Celtic Rangers half and half scarf.
It's a nice contrast of colours. That's the only thing.
Again, fine if it's United against Barcelona or something, and it's not the Champions League final. You go fine, but like Celtic Rangers or Liverpool United, you see them the whole time. Liverpool Everton. Half and half scarf.
Fans get so annoyed. It's like goalkeepers getting beaten at the near post. Like every fan, that's like the worst thing you can ever do in football ever is get beaten at the near post. But like Martial's goal against Ederson at the weekend, he just caught him.
Should have did better though, didn't he?
He'll be disappointed with that at the near post.
Yeah.
What's that about?
But even going back to that internet thing, I couldn't have imagined DVDs coming in when it was kind of mid-90s, and obviously they did come in.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really imagine whatever was next, or even being able to do like research on a Wikipedia, like all that.
I remember dial-up internet still being like, get off the landline phone so I can go on the internet.
I
used to watch the Transfer Centre, which was at ITV, and then ITV's digital page. and I would just log on every day just to watch the transfer gossip for the summer, and it would just load gradually. So it'd be David Ginola's head, say, first when he was at maybe Aston Villa. It's towards the end of his career. And you didn't know what the transfer rumour was going to be. So it was going down bit by bit. I was like, this could be anything.
It was just so underwhelming. It's more dramatic than now when Sky Sports have a 24-hour.
Well, it's just a new generation that would never take that.
You know CFAX, the BBC version, where amazing. They had a transfer page at one point. I think it was still page 323 or something. But the thing is, I think the page stays up for about a minute and then moves to the next one. Sometimes there might be like 14. And
You couldn't stop it, could you?
No, you couldn't. Yeah. I think there was a way to stop it, but it would skip like five or six then.
Yeah, if you missed it. Yeah.
Also, it would catch up with itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes into 14 or whatever. You had to wait for ages to get back to page four. Who's signing Alan Shearer?
Well, I think we have to pay credit to a dear departed friend in Teletext. This year officially went offline.
Yeah,
and that was Irish.
I actually used it until recently because they had really good on my phone. The webpage had really good TV listings. Just throw it out there. People haven't used it in 20 years.
But you used it on your phone?
On my phone. It was a webpage on the RTE website.
220, wasn't it? It was football.
220 was a football. Yeah. And I remember watching the United Liverpool game when Dudek made those mistakes and Forlan scored.
Oh, the Forlan, yeah. 0-2,
I watched
0-3,
that on Teletext on RTE.
I watched that.
United 1-0, Forlan scored. Go on, Forlan. 2-0, yeah. 4. And then 2-1. Haman, I think, maybe scored to make it 2-1 in the 85th minute. I remember watching it being glued to it.
The goal scorers used to be in blue, with the exception of Irish players, which would be green.
Yeah, amazing touch.
Lovely bit of coding.
Amazing touch.
was that the game with the Forlan volley?
No, it was the one where remember when Barthez made two massive errors at Highbury against Arsenal and Reece scored both?
Yeah.
Dudek did the equivalent of that, and I think it was the same score. Was either 2-0 or 3-1?
It was 2-1.
That's right.
They were very scrappy goals. Scored in the 80-something minute to make it 2-1.
Yeah, yeah.
But were both goals dodgy goals?
Definitely one where Dudek went to scoop it, and it just went under his arm, and Forlan tapped it in. And I think the other one was slightly better. Yeah.
Forlan couldn't buy a goal at this stage. Remember when
that was the headline from it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the second one. Yeah, but I remember Saturday afternoon on Teletext was amazing. 5 o'clock, you just get the scores because it was everything you wanted. Right, it was so succinct. It was exactly what you wanted. It was like it dealt with goal scores the minute they scored, sendings off. Did it do subs? The three subs?
No, I don't think so.
Did it do team news
at the end of the game?
No, they didn't do team news.
I thought they had team news and then they had subs. Maybe it wasn't as good as I remembered.
No, it was, because it didn't discriminate either, because it had Scottish football as well. That was a great touch. You have to scroll the whole way down to the bottom of Flash Score now to get a Scottish League score.
The whole point being is that new generation don't have anything. Like they don't have to wait for anything now. So they have all of this instantly.
It's funny because now if you can't see the goal pretty much straight away on your phone,
I would say Sky Sport.
I remember being glued to Teletext.
And Match of the Day, you just had to watch it at 10:30 on Saturday night, unless you actually record on VHS. But even Sky Sports now, on their app on YouTube, they after 6:15 on a Saturday, they have all the goals from that day. Yeah. So I would say that's ruining Match of the Day's figures, because nowadays people literally just want the goals. Yeah. And I'd say people struggle to watch a full match.
Well,
you
used to
going
drive
on their phone.
Me mad though that Sky didn't do that. Like, made no sense to me as a business model.
Yeah, yeah.
When you have all these rights, why you couldn't use them straight away and
just the Match of the Day.
They started to do it now on YouTube. They release them all in 3-minute packages. Boom. That's all you want.
Yeah, it's always it's like a pop song duration, and it is exactly all you want because it's the goals and the major incidents.
Yeah.
And I'd say it's Hammer's Match of the Day.
Yeah, it's actually the same as music actually as well. Because I remember I think I was trying to download, what was it, White Stripes, the Seven Nation Army.
In 2003?
Afterwards, like in about 06. And I think it took me about 3 hours between all the buffering to get the entire song downloaded. And then like it didn't even work properly. But that's the year we're talking about, dial-up connection and everything just being kind of slow and non-instantaneous.
Yeah, and I forget what my point was going to be.
I took your point away. But like it's the same. Like whereas now we have Spotify or whatever that. You've
remembered what it is.
Yeah, go on.
The goals on YouTube. I still find myself wanting though. When you watch it, you're like 3 minutes? Do I really get a full grasp of what the game
is? You fast forward through the 3 minutes?
No. Like, I still wait. I do want more. Like, I'd rather sit. Maybe it's because I have to talk about the games or whatever. Yeah. But like,
it depends on the game as well. Sometimes it's like, if it's, you know.
Well, if it's a 0-0 against Watford Crystal Palace one, I didn't even bother watching. Because what's the point? But like, if it's the United game, the 2-1 against City over the weekend.
Of course, you want to see. It
had Rashford hitting the crossbar and the penalty and then the two goals. The three goals. That's all it had.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It didn't show the several breaks, the several handball incidents. So you're missing out in some of the game as well that way.
Right. I think it might be time to actually talk about the weekend's Premier League. So we're just going to take a little break. The book, if you're looking for Derek Hammond's work, Football Gift Book, has all the toys of yesteryear and games, etc. Well worth a read. I've actually handed over my copy to Richie McCormick because I know he's very much into that kind of stuff. So that's his Christmas sorted now. But we'll be back after the break with a bit of Premier League. All right, welcome back to Team 33. So we're actually going to move to present day after all that nostalgia. To be honest, I always prefer nostalgia over present day anyway, but Endicall and Derek Ryan are still here. First off, Scotland, actually, because we don't always get to them, but unlike Teletext, I was following the Celtic Rangers game on Twitter because I was somewhere where I wasn't beside a stream or a TV. It seems Rangers battered Celtic, but the end result, of course, is has been over the last few years, Celtic win.
Yep. 10 domestic trophies in a row now for Celtic. 4th Scottish League Cup in a row for Celtic. And they're on course for the quadruple, treble, and 10 in a row. So it's not been a bad week for Celtic. It was a bad performance.
So how many are they in the row now at the moment?
They're 9 in a row at the minute. They're going, this is the Holy Grail year. This is the year where...
They've already won 9.
They only need to win one more to be the eternal kings of Scottish football forever. And that's not even being hyperbolic about it.
It's
something that's never been done, and it's something that probably never will be done again.
Rangers won 9 in a row back in the...
In the 90s. It was stopped in 1999.
Oh, was that their first... Was that the only time it's ever been done?
9 in a row, that was the first time it was ever been done,
yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
And ever since, it's just been what your aim is in the Scottish League, because you're not coming up against any other teams other than Celtic and Rangers. The last team to compete for the Scottish title was Sir Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen side. So that's the way the league is. Rangers did batter Celtic, but
is there a sense they've caught? Well, obviously they've closed the gap from where they were when they were relegated, or when they were reborn as a different club, or whatever they're called now. Stephen Gerrard's Rangers, actually. Mm-hmm. But I get the sense, just looking at the table and the momentum they've had, that they're almost there. They're not quite there, though.
They've certainly improved this year, and I think it would be remiss not to give them credit for that, because they have. And it's actually a good thing for Celtic in a way that they've improved, because not only does that give them a bit of competition in the league, but also in Europe, Rangers topped a group, a really tough group, with Porto and another couple of tough teams in it. And the fact that they topped it, the fact that Celtic topped their group, it brings up the
coefficient
ranking, and the fact that Kilmarnock were there last year as well. It's bringing up the Scottish League in that sense, so they'll get a better seeding next year, or in the next couple of years they might actually do a little bit better, or it might be a little bit easier for them. Rangers have improved, but none of that matters unless they win a trophy. And at the end of this year, I've said it from the beginning of Stephen Gerrard's reign, if he doesn't win a trophy, it's a failure. It doesn't matter how close you get to Celtic, it doesn't matter whether Celtic win the league by 1 point or 10 points. If you're not winning the trophy, or winning a trophy instead of Celtic, it's a complete failure.
Yeah.
That's the long and the short of the Celtic League, or the Scottish League. You're competing with one team. Celtic are competing with one team, and if Celtic don't beat that one team that they're competing with to the trophies that they're competing for, it's a failure. So it's the same goes for Rangers, and the Rangers fans will not put up with whether Stephen Gerrard, whether they'll give him one more year after this off their patience. I don't even think he'll get that if they don't win a trophy this year.
there's a sense I've seen as well that financially as well, obviously Rangers have put quite a lot behind it, and I don't know how sustainable that is, especially given their recent, very recent history.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not sustainable at all unless
they get into the Champions League.
They get into the Champions League, and they're not doing that anytime soon.
Well, you're that sure? They're only what, 2 points off?
The problem, see, this is also the issue with the fact that Rangers' improvement has only gone to the extent that they're competing with Celtic, but when it comes to the big games against Celtic, Celtic have been winning those. Mm. So if you're competing with one team for the league and they keep beating you in the league, it only ends with them that other team winning it. So Rangers beat Celtic twice in the last 7 years, I think. They beat them last year, and they beat them the year before in a last game of the season, or the final Old Firm of the season, that was pointless because Celtic had already won the league. They're competing in a sense that they're up there and they're pushing them hard at the top of the table, but if they don't beat them in the Old Firms, then they're not going to win the league. So it's not looking good for them.
Oh, well. But Manchester United, though, Derek, I think I did read somewhere that somebody, where was it? Was it in The Guardian or somewhere, that the little run they've had here where they've won a couple of games in a row, including a big derby game, it's their biggest sign of improvement since Alex Ferguson left, which I think is going way too far.
Yeah, I mean, there's been obviously...
In comparison, like, there have been little over the last little peaks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so it's the hyperbole of United this season has been mad, though, because...
In both senses,
both senses, yeah. in, like, before the Spurs game, Ollie was in danger of being sacked. Now there's fans want to give him a 10-year call. You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous. I mean, like, nobody knows either way, and no one knew before the Spurs game, and no one knows since the City game, if Solskjaer is going to be successful at United. No one knows that. But, like, give the guy some time. That's what I said before the Spurs game. Obviously, it's still the same situation now. It's great to get the two wins, especially over Mourinho and Pep. And it's a big boost to Solskjaer, because there possibly was a danger of him getting sacked, which is ridiculous, but there possibly was, because of the way the shambles United are, that they could easily have sacked him, especially with Pochettino being available. You would think Poch, like, barring a massive collapse between now and the new year from United, which means pretty much losing every game, you would think that, like, Poch will probably get a job between now and probably mid-January. Bayern Munich has been touted and other clubs as well. So you would think that that's probably the end of that, unless Solskjaer, like I say, United have a big collapse. But I've been saying it all season. Give the guys some time. Let's not overreact by some really poor results, which they have been, losing to Newcastle, throwing away Leeds against Villa and Sheffield United in recent weeks as well. But also, let's not, from a United point of view, go over the top and claim United are back and they're going to win the league next year because they beat City, who this season have been genuinely poor in some respects. Not all the time, but they've been inconsistent in a lot of respects this season. So, you know, okay, United got a good result against Liverpool, the only team to take any points off Liverpool this season. Obviously Spurs and Chelsea and City. So they've been doing well against the big clubs. It's been an issue in terms of breaking down the so-called smaller clubs has been United's problem this year. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be getting, overly excited by the fact that United won two really big games, two big results for Solskjaer, but neither was I getting overly excited because they were drawn and throwing games away against the likes of Villa and Sheffield United. Just, he needs time. He needs another two at least transfer windows to bring in players. It's funny because Fred, before the Spurs game, Fred was being dismissed, get rid of him, he's useless. And then he had two very good games and he's suddenly the answer to United's problems in midfield, you know. If Pogba comes back, he had Pogba, Fred and McTominay in midfield, it'll be great. Like, Fred literally 2 games ago was being dismissed as being absolutely useless. So I still think United obviously need quite a few signings over the next year, over the next two transfer windows, probably 4 players to go straight into that team. But it's good. It's a positive sign that they can perform and play quite well against City. It wasn't like a smash and grab. I didn't see the Spurs game, but the City game, they deserve to win. I mean, you spoke already about the hitting the post. He had a chance. Rashford had a chance before he hit the post. He hit the crossbar, and before he hit the crossbar, he had another chance as well, which could have made it 3 or 4-0 By the time, by even half time, United were well on top in that game. So it was a good performance and a good result, obviously. But
yeah, because I think, what was it, earlier in the season, Rashford's the young player, but there was a sense of, oh no, he's not developing properly, all this kind of stuff. Back in our day, when it was just newspapers and the odd bit of TV, there was none of that hyperbole. I mean, I think I remember Ferguson losing like 3 games in a row, but it was never the crisis now that you've, you know, that's social media, etc.
That's because, like, it was like that in the papers, but the book stopped at the papers.
Yeah.
You didn't have every Tom, Dick and Harry on Twitter giving their opinion on it and having that opinion vocalized on a platform that millions of people can see. So, and just on the point of Rashford, and I think some of the criticism of him in particular has been quite harsh this year. He's 21 years old. I know he's experienced, but he's 21 years old and he's leading this United team. And I actually didn't realise how many goals he has this year. He's third top goal scorer in the Premier League this season. He's 3 goals behind Jamie Vardy, who's being touted as being the best striker in the Premier League. And oh, it's great how well Jamie Vardy is playing. And it is great to see Jamie Vardy playing well. He's playing phenomenal football. And Rashford's only 3 to 4 goals behind him.
But I also think Rashford, when he was being criticised, he was playing in that 9 role because Martial was out injured. And that was a lot of the thing. He was carrying the attack pretty much. People slag Martial, but since he's come back, Rashford's been an awful lot better as well. He's been playing kind of more to the left. And I do think that the fact that he has Martial there has helped him over the past few weeks. And that's when he's kind of gone on this really good run of form where he's banging in the goals. And like I say, he's doing very, very well. It was a big season for him, though. I know you were saying a lot of criticism, but, you know, Solskjaer had to, you know, the big thing this year, he was giving guys a chance, giving Martial, giving Rashford a chance to say, okay, yeah, do you deserve a place in this team from, you know, going forward? Mm-hmm. Lukaku was obviously gone. Sanchez was gone. And there was a danger that if he didn't perform well this season, obviously he wouldn't be sold, but that they'd bring somebody else in to play on that left-hand side to replace Sanchez, really, and Rashford could easily have been demoted to a squad player instead. So he's really stepped up in the past few games, which is great to see because I do think he's a really good talent. The thing is, from a United attack point of view, can Martial do the same thing? Because he's been quite good a lot of the time, but he's still slightly inconsistent this season. He kind of needs to step up as well.
Yeah, when they're at it, they're absolutely phenomenal. Like, they're really, really tough to beat going forward as a front line, James, Rashford and Martial. And even Jesse Lingard, who was excellent against City, really good against Tottenham as well. And I suppose, again, it comes down to that whole situation that United are in at the minute, is that they're better against the sides that will attack them, and the fact that Lingard has pace and those three front men are probably the fastest in the league combined, they're so dangerous on the break that they're a natural fit going forward. But it's against the smaller sides that the questions are going to be asked against United. And funny enough, it's actually the reverse of what was happening with Lukaku last year, that if United had Lukaku this year, but he was happy enough to be a secondary striker in the big games, United would probably be in a much better position because they'd have Lukaku banging in the goals against the weaker sides, bullying those small sides as he was roundly applauded for. And then he could take a back seat in the bigger games where they needed pace on the break and let Martial, Lingard and Rashford do their business. But that was never going to work as a sustainable model. So Solskjaer made that decision, and it's probably something that's going to, the forward line is probably not going to be addressed. It's going to be more midfield creative role, so that someone can give those players the options to do what Lukaku was doing against the smaller sides.
That's what I'm saying. I still think there's a big gap there in the United team in terms of a creative player, both a deep line creative player and a 10, someone further up the pitch. I mean, presuming Pogba goes next summer, which I think everybody's presuming, but whether or not that happens, no one knows. But Pogba certainly takes up one of those roles, probably the 10 for me. He'd be ideal in that 10 role behind that front three if he was to stay. But if he does go, United probably need to replace him. United probably need to replace and sign another creative player, deep line creative player, and quite possibly need to sign another player. I mean, McTominay has been quality this year. I'm not saying McTominay leaves the team, but certainly probably need to sign another player there. Probably need to sign three midfielders.
Would you be surprised if United sold Pogba in January?
No, the way Solskjaer has gone about his business, he's been very quick to get rid of players that he feels don't want to be there or don't need to be there. Obviously, Lukaku, Sanchez, Chris Smalling, players like that. So it wouldn't surprise me. And if he's going, I'd rather he went as quick as possible. The only thing is replacing him. Yeah. United have been, I mean, can they replace him in January? If, I mean, Christian Eriksen's contract expires in the summer, a lot of talk that he will leave in January, and I can see him leaving in January. If he became available and United had to sell Pogba to afford to buy Eriksen, I'd be, you know, quite happy with that. In terms of a long-term vision, this season's been all about the long-term aspect for United. I don't really mind this season if United don't get top four. It'd be great if they did, but I'd much rather they were building something so that next season they actually have a 8-9 of the players who are going to be a key part next season into pushing, again, not to win the title next year, but to really get that top four next year. And if they can get that, then great. But if they can't, then you know, they're really going to struggle.
Right. Endicott's just jumping out here, but the only other thing, I suppose, what made me nostalgic during the
nostalgia today, yeah, Ralph.
I love nostalgia. It's always good to look back.
Yeah.
But Duncan Ferguson coming in to massive fanfare,
yes,
on against Chelsea. Obviously, he did inspire a 3-1 win, but obviously he's not going to get the job there long term. And Vitor Pereira has ruled himself out today as well. I'm not sure where they're going to go in terms, like, I'm hearing Unai Emery is kind of putting his name in the ring.
I'd still like to see Unai Emery take on another job, because Arsenal's a bit of a basket case. So, I mean, it remains to be seen if that was Emery's fault or not. You know, we'll have to wait and see about who takes over from him at Arsenal long term. But like, certainly Emery's career can't be just dismissed based on the fact that Arsenal was a disaster. It's much like United over the past 6-7 years. You can't dismiss Louis van Gaal's career based on the fact that he was poor, or Mourinho the same. Speculation about David Moyes going back in there, even short term. I'm not sure.
His United contract has run out now, so
he's free to move. He's available. But I mean, as a short term solution, certainly to the end of the season, I mean, I think he'd be quite happy with that. And Everton might be. A lot of the fans obviously don't like him, but I think a lot of Everton fans have a small bit of delusion of grandeur.
Do you not remember what he did for them?
Yes.
In the period where they weren't, you know, where they didn't have that much money. Bill Kenwright was the chairman. He was always trying to get investment the whole time, but they, you know, they were always down near the bottom half of the league in terms of spending power.
And absolutely, in terms of spending power, they couldn't sign a striker for years. Yeah. They had no real striker for years. So, there is kind of revisionism about Moyes' time at Everton, where like he's dismissed as being a backward manager and stuff. They brought in obviously the likes of Ronald Koeman and Martinez and Silva, who are more progressive managers, you would say.
Moyes had a few kind of technical players and stuff. I remember at the time. Now I might be mixing up with maybe who his successors, but I think Arteta went there.
Arteta was there when he was there. Yeah.
What's his name? Pienaar.
Pienaar was there.
Yeah, again,
yeah,
they're all kind of clever ball players as well.
Yeah.
And he still had somebody like Tim Cahill, who was technical but also could play direct as well. But it wasn't Tony Pulis football.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of revisionism about what he did there as well. But also, and I'm a big fan of progressive managers, and I think Marco Silva is actually, I mean, I just hate when, you know, if you're a failure at one club, you're therefore seen as a failure full stop. I actually think there's something about him that I quite like. So I'd like to see him take on another job in England or elsewhere. But I actually do think he could be a decent manager.
He'd be back at Watford.
Back at Watford, exactly. But I do think he'd be a decent manager if he's given the opportunity to be so. But at the same time, the progressive managers that we're talking about, Martinez and Ronald Koeman in particular, and Silva, they haven't brought Everton up to the heights of where they were under Moyes, which is okay.
Martinez did for a season.
He did one season,
and then he fell away. Yeah.
Koeman had a very good season in his first season.
Yeah,
he fell away as well. Now, again, Moyes, I remember, I think his first couple of years he did very well. Then there was the year where they nearly got relegated, or they were in the bottom half of the table.
Yeah, but he always kept them kind of top 10. They were often kind of somewhere between 5th and 8th.
There was a season or two where they were kind of struggling. But apart from that, he had them up there in 5th, 6th. They were the 5th place team. They were kind of edging out Spurs to be the 5th best team for quite a few years in 5th, 6th, 7th. And you know, over the last few years, Everton have been so inconsistent that if they had consistently fifth, sixth, seventh over the past few years, they'd be delighted with that. Now, maybe football's moved on, maybe the league has moved on for Moyes, and maybe he won't. I mean, he left there in 2013, so it's 6 years ago, it'll be 7 years ago now next year. So
I think the United experience broke him somewhat.
It did,
because sometimes that can happen. You have one terrible experience.
Yeah.
And even it was bad at United, but was it as bad as people make out?
I don't think he was...
It just didn't work. It didn't work, but...
Yeah, I don't think he was to blame completely for it. I think that's the big thing. He's taken all the blame for it because Ed Woodward sacked him, but, you know... I think what's happened since his departure at United shows that he was not the only one to blame for what happened there. But I think it probably wouldn't be a long-term solution, certainly unless he does very well over the next 6 months.
Just keep them up, make sure they don't go down.
Yes, absolutely. And I think from that point of view, I think it'd be a good appointment.
Yeah, and I think that does sum us up now for this week's show. I think we've two more shows before the end of 2019, so we'll probably be seeing you back in here.
Yes, absolutely.
But thanks to Endicall and Colin Boog for coming in earlier as well. We'll be back next Friday. Take it away, Johan.